Pressure shows first in the small moments. A woman holds the line at work long after her body signals that she is done. Another comforts a family member while swallowing her own fear. In Kingston and Chicago, the pattern looks the same. Black women carry weight that entire systems have decided they can handle. No one says it out loud, but the rule sits underneath everything. Be unbreakable. Be steady. Be the one who keeps the room from falling apart. The cost surfaces only when the pressure gains a shape that cannot be ignored. The investigation begins here, at the point where strength stops looking like pride and starts looking like survival with no exit. The question is not why these women endure. The question is why the world around them expects it and who benefits from that. Expectation. Chapter 1. The Inheritance of Pressure. The investigation starts with a pattern that crosses borders and generations. The phrase strong black woman appears in interviews, workplaces, homes, and churches, and it carries weight that women describe in clear terms. They say it feels like duty. They say it feels like a title they never agreed to carry. In Kingston, on a humid weekday morning, the newsroom receives a message from a nurse who wants her name withheld. She works 12-hour rotations with short staffing and high demand. She explains that strength is assumed the moment she steps through the hospital doors. She hears it in the way supervisors speak to her, and in the way families lean on her during long nights. She says the title sounds like praise, but it functions like a trap. It tells her she cannot ask for help, because help is for people who are allowed to break. The investigation continues in Chicago, where a retail supervisor sits in a quiet corner of her store before opening. She explains that she learned to hold everything together from a mother and grandmother. They told her that life would push hard and she had to push back twice. She never questioned the message because it kept food on the table. Now she notices how it shapes her reactions at work. She does not voice stress. She does not show anger. She is careful. She says that the world sees her calm and believes she feels nothing. She says the truth is that she feels everything, but has been taught to make space for no one to witness it. A third interview comes from a university student who grew up between both cities. She says she learned the same lesson early. Strength meant staying quiet. Strength meant carrying tasks that her brothers never had to touch. She recalls family gatherings where women moved with purpose from kitchen to living room while the men sat and talked. She says no one declared a rule. The rule lived in the routine. By the time she entered high school, the pattern felt like culture. She explains that she now sees how it follows her into adulthood, shaping every choice she makes. She fears that she will repeat it with her own children if she does not understand where it came from. The investigation shifts from interviews to early socialization. In both Jamaica and the United States, young girls report receiving subtle messages about resilience. Adults tell them to be good and strong. They tell them not to cry too much. They tell them to step in when something needs to be done. Studies show that black girls are often viewed as more mature than their age. Researchers note that this perception begins in elementary school. Girls who express frustration or exhaustion are more likely to be disciplined. They learn early that softness carries consequences. They learn that silence keeps peace. By adolescence, many already hold roles that stretch them thin. National data sets reveal a clear pattern of caretaking burdens. Black women often carry responsibility for younger siblings, elders, and extended family members. They perform unpaid labor that rarely receives recognition. Many say it feels like a rite of passage, but the investigation shows that the weight grows heavier with every generation. Women describe how their mothers carried the same load. Their grandmothers did the same before them. It becomes inheritance rather than choice. The pressure builds because each generation assumes the next will continue the pattern without question. In Kingston, the nurse explains that her earliest memory of strength comes from watching her grandmother move through hardship with calm certainty. The older woman hid her fear during a storm that damaged their home.
She reassured the family while she carried debris out of the yard. The nurse recalls thinking that strength meant keeping everyone else steady. She says she never saw the older woman cry, even during loss. That became the model she followed. Now she questions whether her grandmother ever had time to feel anything beyond duty.
In Chicago, the retail supervisor describes a moment from childhood when her mother worked double shifts for 3 straight weeks. She watched her mother return home after midnight, remove her shoes, and sit in silence for a few minutes before heading to bed. She remembers wanting to ask if her mother was tired. She never did. The message felt clear. Her mother would not rest until everything was handled. Now the supervisor says she understands the cost. That pattern taught her to ignore her own limits. Across the interviews, a consistent question emerges. When women frame strength as survival, they rarely acknowledge that survival often means sacrifice. The investigation records each woman describing a moment when she realized the pattern was not about empowerment. It was about endurance without relief. A nurse says her turning point came when she fainted during a shift and still apologized to her supervisor for disrupting the workload. The supervisor in Chicago says her moment came when she broke down in her car after a customer confrontation and still walked back inside without telling anyone. The student says she reached hers when she tried to manage school, work, and caregiving at once. She realized she had no language for asking for support. These early scenes reveal how strength becomes a requirement rather than a quality. Society frames it as something admirable, yet the investigation shows that it positions women to absorb pressure that others distribute away from themselves. The title becomes a shield that protects institutions rather than the women carrying the burden. In both cities, the same pattern holds. When workers speak up about strain, they are told they are capable. They are told they have handled worse. These responses turn strength into expectation, pushing women deeper into silence. The chapter closes with the central question surfacing in full. If generations of women have been shaped to endure without visible strain, how did this become the accepted norm? And who benefits when strength is used as a standard instead of a choice? Chapter 2. Systems that feed on strength. The investigation moves from individual inheritance to the systems that rely on it. The phrase strong black woman is not sustained by memory alone. It is reinforced through workplaces, churches, schools, and community structures that treat resilience as standard operating fuel. When the investigation enters a large public hospital in Chicago, the pattern becomes clear in the first hour. Staff shortages place strain on every floor. Yet, supervisors assign the heaviest patient loads to women who have shown they can carry them. One nurse explains that she tried to request lighter duties after a back injury. Her manager responded by reminding her that she had always been one of the strong ones. She says the message was simple. Pain does not alter expectations. Asking for relief may even be read as a weakness that shifts how leadership values her. A human resources officer in Kingston offers a direct explanation. She says many organizations operate on silent assumptions. Workers who can withstand pressure without complaint become the ones who are asked to absorb more. She admits that it is unfair. She says it is common. In her office, cases arise each month involving women who burn out after taking on tasks that stretch far beyond their job descriptions. She says that when they raise concerns, the response often frames their endurance as proof that they can continue. She calls it the quiet cycle. It begins as recognition, then becomes exploitation. She insists that organizations rarely intend harm. The harm occurs anyway because the pattern rewards silence and punishes vulnerability. The investigation examines schools next. Teachers in both countries report similar patterns. Black girls are often placed in leadership roles during group projects. They handle conflict, organization, and emotional management for their classmates. One teacher in Chicago says she assigns roles intentionally to support skill development. When asked if boys receive the same expectations, she hesitates. She says the girls tend to be more responsible. The investigation notes that this framing mirrors national research on adultification. Girls described as responsible become responsible by force. They absorb tasks that their peers do not. This early conditioning shapes how workplaces treat them later. Churches also play a role. In Kingston, a community organizer explains that women often form the backbone of ministry support. They run programs, manage events, care for elders, and lead outreach work. He says the church praises them for their steady service, but he acknowledges that the praise hides the truth. Women do the labor because the labor must be done and few others volunteer. He says the expectation becomes scripture in practice, even if not in doctrine. When women step back, the community feels the loss and pushes them to return. He describes this pressure as cultural momentum. It keeps moving unless someone stops it. The investigation then turns to maternal health data. Reports in both countries reveal disparities that connect directly to endurance culture. Black women enter pregnancy with higher stress markers. They are more likely to report symptoms that clinicians overlook. A physician in Chicago says she sees patients who downplay pain because they do not want to be perceived as difficult. She says this makes diagnosis harder and increases risk. She recalls one case in which a woman waited too long to report early signs of preeclampsia. When asked why, the patient said she believed she could push through it the same way she always pushed through everything else. The physician says this mindset is widespread and dangerous. Public records reveal disciplinary disparities in workplaces as well. Women who assert boundaries often face pushback. The investigation reviews a case in which an employee in Kingston received a formal warning after requesting that her workload be redistributed. She had covered 2 vacant positions for 6 months. When she asked for relief, her supervisor wrote that her attitude had changed and that her reliability was in question. The investigation confirms the documents. The woman later resigned. The pattern fits reports from other offices where women described retaliation disguised as performance critique. The midpoint reversal occurs with a detailed case study drawn from interviews and verified records. A woman in Chicago attempted to set limits at her job after years of managing emotional labor. Colleagues came to her with conflicts, frustrations, and personal issues. She says she listened because it seemed easier than refusing. Over time, she became the department's unofficial counselor. When she informed management that she needed clear work boundaries to handle her actual role, she expected support. Instead, leadership interpreted her request as resistance. She received fewer opportunities, and her evaluation shifted from strong to inconsistent. She says the turning point was not the workload. It was the punishment for trying to define her limits. This case reflects a systemic reality. Strength becomes a tool for institutions until the moment a woman tries to withdraw it. Then the institution reframes her as a problem. The investigation analyzes how emotional labor becomes invisible currency. Women describe managing the morale of teams, smoothing conflicts, and holding tension that others refuse to absorb. This work rarely appears in evaluations. It does not translate into promotions. It becomes a silent requirement. One community organizer in Kingston says emotional steadiness has become the biggest unpaid job in many spaces. He explains that women do the work because they are expected to. When they stop, entire environments falter. He says people notice the drop in comfort before they notice the drop in fairness. A psychologist in Chicago explains that chronic suppression of needs reflects system design. She says that institutions shape identities by rewarding behaviors that make operations run smoothly. When women demonstrate endurance, systems escalate demands without adjusting structure. She says, this is not accidental. It is functional. The strong Black woman archetype keeps workplaces moving without addressing root inequities. She warns that the long-term impact is severe burnout and early health decline. The investigation finds that silence functions like policy. No document instructs women to absorb pressure. No leader announces that vulnerability is unacceptable. The message spreads through response patterns. A woman who complains is labeled sensitive. A woman who stays silent is labeled reliable. Over time, reliability wins. Women adapt because adaptation ensures safety. they learned that voicing limits may shift their standing in ways that affect pay, security, or future opportunities.
In both Kingston and Chicago, the investigation hears the same line. You are strong. You can handle it. This sentence appears supportive, but the impact is clear. It normalizes overextension. It shields institutions from accountability. It removes the option to fail without consequence. The more women carry, the more they are asked to carry. The system relies on the assumption that they will not collapse. The chapter closes on a rising question that sharpens the investigation's urgency. If the environments that depend on women's endurance refuse to change, what happens when women finally reach the point where endurance is impossible?
Chapter 3. Breaking the pattern. Counting the cost. The final stage of the investigation moves into the lives of women who attempt to step outside the archetype. Their decisions form the clearest evidence of how costly the generational pattern has become. In Kingston, a woman in her late 30s describes the moment she chose to set a boundary. She worked in the banking sector for more than a decade. For years, she arrived early, stayed late, and absorbed stress that her team distributed to her without question. One night, she felt her chest tighten as she reviewed a stack of overdue cases. She placed the files down and realized that she had no more capacity. The next morning, she requested a meeting with her supervisor and outlined new limits on her workload. The response was swift. She was told that her attitude had changed. She was told that she needed to be a team player. She says that was the first time she understood that her strength had never been her own. It had been institutional property. In Chicago, a teacher describes a different moment. She spent years leading committees, supporting colleagues, and guiding students through emotional crises that stretched far beyond her role. Her principal praised her reliability. Parents thanked her for her guidance. She says she did not resent the work. She resented the silence around it. When she told her administration that she needed to step back from non-essential duties, she expected understanding. Instead, she watched her assignments shift to positions considered less desirable. She lost a leadership stipend. She says the message was clear. Her worth had entered to her willingness to carry weight that others refused to touch. The investigation documents these stories, not as isolated incidents, but as evidence of the cultural cost of refusing the archetype. Rejecting expectation reshapes personal relationships as well. When a woman in Kingston says her decision to set boundaries at work forced her to address the habits in her family. For years, she handled the caregiving responsibilities for her parents while her siblings focused on their own lives. When she told them she needed help, she met resistance. They asked why she was changing. They said she had always managed before. She told them that managing had become unsustainable. She says the conflict lasted months before anyone adjusted. She notes that the system around her fought harder than she expected because her withdrawal exposed its dependence. Community reactions follow similar lines. A woman in Chicago explains that she began attending therapy after years of holding stress that she could not name. She says that therapy gave her clarity about the pressure she grew up with, the expectations she carried, and the emotional labor she offered without limit. When she started saying no to requests that drained her, some friends questioned her motives. They accused her of becoming distant. They said she was acting different. She says the truth was simpler. She had stopped performing strength for others. The investigation turns to a psychologist who studies generational trauma. She explains that breaking a pattern requires confronting the narrative that shaped it. Black women have been taught that resilience is a virtue. She does not dispute this. She argues that resilience has been weaponized. When strength becomes the only acceptable form of identity, any attempt to embrace vulnerability threatens the system. That threat triggers backlash. Families fear disruption. Workplaces fear gaps. Communities fear instability. She says this fear is the source of the cost women face when they choose to redefine their roles. The investigation then explores how women rebuild life after stepping out of the archetype. One woman in Kingston sought support groups that focused on shared experience rather than silent endurance. She says the groups gave her language she had never used before. She learned that boundaries are not rejection. They are structure. She learned that self-care is not luxury. It is stability. She says the most powerful realization came when she recognized that she had always believed suffering was part of strength. She now understands that suffering is often the product of systems that refuse to change. Another woman in Chicago started with smaller steps. She adjusted her work schedule. She reduced the emotional labor she provided by default. She gave herself permission to rest on weekends without feeling guilt. She says these decisions felt like rebellion at first. They later felt like survival. Her health improved. Her stress markers dropped. She says she sees now how deeply pressure has shaped her self-image. She notes that hewing requires unlearning habits that were praised for decades. Backlash, however, remains a consistent part of the transition. The investigation records conversations with women who faced subtle retaliation. A teacher in Kingston reports that after stepping back from extra duties, colleagues began excluding her from informal networks. A woman in Chicago reports that family members described her as ungrateful when she no longer stepped into the role of mediator. Another woman explains that her friends accused her of abandoning them when she stopped absorbing their emotional burdens. These reactions reveal that the archetype does not collapse quietly. It resists change because it benefits too many people. The investigation evaluates the institutional response as well. Some workplaces offer wellness programs, but women report that these programs do not address structural expectations. A human resources specialist in Chicago says wellness cannot compensate for imbalance. She states that recognition without redistribution of responsibility is ineffective. The investigation confirms her assessment by reviewing employee data. Women who reduce their workload face slower advancement. Those who maintain their workload face burnout. There is no sustainable path without structural reform. To understand the generational impact, the investigation speaks with an elder in Kingston. She recalls raising her children during a time when survival depended on endurance. She says she never questioned the weight she carried because questioning it felt dangerous. She explains that she watches her granddaughters now and sees them trying to navigate boundaries she never had the chance to consider. She calls it progress, but she warns that progress always comes with a price. She says the danger is not in breaking the pattern. The danger is in believing that breaking it will be easy. The investigation concludes with the synthesis of what must shift. Strength must become a choice, not a requirement. Workplaces must evaluate the silent policies that assign emotional and physical labor unequally. Families must share responsibility rather than defaulting to the most capable member. Communities must support women who choose vulnerability. These changes require intention. They require discomfort. Most of all, they require confronting the reality that strength has been used to mask systemic failings for generations. As the investigation closes, it becomes clear that freedom from the archetype demands more than personal decisions. It requires structural accountability. Women cannot dismantle a generational burden alone. The systems that benefited from their endurance must adjust, or the cycle will continue.